have to. Well, sorry about that. So we will open up. There will be two short talks, the first one about the heart, the second one about the mind. Get time for questions and discussion. So we will the meeting in regards to think with the heart, with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, pages 19 going over to 20. And this whole idea will be, from this reading, we will be able to see how the heart and the mind connect with each other. He who attendeth to the inclinations of senses, in them hath a concern. From this concern is created passion. From passion, anger. From anger is produced delusion. From delusion, a loss of memory. From the loss of memory, loss of discrimination. And from loss of discrimination, loss of own. So right in this portion of the sentence, we can see how the heart and the mind are connected. But he who, free from attachment or repulsion for objects, experiences them through senses and organs with his mind obedient to his will. So we see will and even desire play into this topic, and attains to tranquility of thought. And this tranquil state attained therefrom shall soon result a separation from all troubles, and his mind being thus at ease, fixed upon one object, it embraceth wisdom from all sides. The man whose heart and mind are not at rest, and today we'll be looking at the combination of the two and how both of them cannot be at rest, is without wisdom or the power of contemplation. Who doth not practice reflection hath no calm. And how can a man without calm obtain happiness? The uncontrolled heart, following the dictates of the moving passions, snatcheth away his spiritual knowledge as the storm the bark upon the raging ocean. Therefore, O great armed one, he is possessed of spiritual knowledge whose senses are withheld from objects of sense. What is night to those who are unenlightened is as day to his gaze. What seems as day is known to him as night, the night of ignorance. Such is the self-governed sage. So thinking with the heart, how does that happen? How does the heart think? How is it connected with the mind? And there are times when one does need to think with the heart and to feel with the brain. So how does it think with the heart? How can we look at this in a practical matter? It seems somewhat metaphysical, doesn't it? So what happens when someone feels totally from the heart, where the intellect is not involved at all? At those points, we can look at somebody being very codependent with someone else. They feel as though emotionally they need to help this person at any cost. Misguided sympathy, feeling sorry for somebody, and not really being a good assist or support to them because they're feeling so sorry for them. Personal love, where one gives themselves totally over to another person and pretty much gives up their own life, their own desires, that type of thing. And then vanity, hate, and pride. These can be all emotions from the heart that are not tempered by the idea of intellect or mind. The heart can function in two manners. As we said, one, completely by emotion, or two, acting emotionally, but thinking with knowledge. The heart has to make decisions from a position that includes knowledge. And the idea that the philosophy puts forth of self-induced and self-devised methods, this is how the heart learns to put in the action, into action, a proper combination of heart and intellect. The heart not only feels, as we said, but needs to think as well. And feelings are a combination of thought and desire. And when we look at desire, we talk about behind will stands desire. So if the heart is thinking with this idea of will and desire, it is coloring those emotions depending upon what those desires are. And we can look at motive being involved as well. What is the motive that this person is feeling and putting into action? And with the heart can color the feelings and color thought, as well as thought and feelings can color the heart response. And living totally by the heart, without intellect, knowledge, or wisdom involved, this is when somebody has been called, has people say, oh, they're just very emotional people, because there is no limit. There's no control over the emotions when the intellect is not involved. So as we can say, there's a difference between a head thought and a heart thought. So truth, when we look at this idea of truth, and we're not talking about relative truth, which is something that is just kind of day to day, can change from day to day. Something can be true now, and in a few days, months, years, can be something different. So we're looking at real truth. And the real truth is true from ancient times until now. And this real truth is an action from the heart. It is not intellect, but heart. And compassion, true compassion, is tempered, is emotion tempered by intellect. It has the wisdom, it has the knowledge. And compassion is of the heart quality. Compassion is the main idea that we try to put forth in theosophy, is the idea of compassion. So the spiritual heart then is when compassion is acting from the heart with its idea of love and compassion. And if this wisdom is not involved, if intellect is not involved, then the emotion remains distant and detached. Reason and intuition, are psychically charged through the head and the heart. So, how then, practically, do we accomplish this idea of melding the heart with intellect and thought? Practically, we can think of some things to help our hearts become less emotional. To try to forget ourselves, which is the lower mind, the lower self. Because when we do that, then the heart, what they call the memory of the heart, can then be awakened. Hidden in this memory is the soul's knowledge, which can solve every problem of human need. This is what is known as the heart doctrine, is when soul knowledge awakens the heart. Compassion comes through, and then at the same time, intellect tempers it. So just a couple interesting things. We can't get away of talking about the heart without looking at it physically. And in 19, and we'll see how physically the heart is connected to the brain or mind. In 1991, it was discovered that the heart has a little brain, or physically, the real name is called an intrinsic cardiac nervous system. This heart brain is composed of approximately 40,000 neurons that are alike the neurons in the brain, meaning that the heart has its own nervous system. In addition, the heart communicates with the brain in many methods. And one thing we want to say is that the brain can be considered as being the vehicle for mind. What mind thinks, it is transferred into the brain, and then there's action or thought or both. The heart communicates with the brain in many methods, neurologically, biochemically, biophysically, and energetically. There's a very long nerve that goes from the brain, goes straight down through the heart, and ends down by the coccyx. And signals from this heart brain redirect to the brain, and the heart sends more signals to the brain than vice versa. So the brain is not as involved with the heart as the heart is with the brain. And we recently had a doctor tell us, and it was rather fortuitous, that of all the cardiac output, meaning all the blood that the heart pumps out, the brain uses 25% of that cardiac output, which means 75% for the rest of the body. So we'll close then with another quote from the Bhagavad Gita on page 33. Those who have spiritual discrimination call him wise, whose undertakings are all free from desire, for his actions are consumed in the fire of knowledge. He abandoned the desire to see a reward for his actions, is free, contented, and upon nothing dependent, and although engaged in action, he really doeth nothing. He is not solicitous of results, with mind and body subdued, and being above enjoyment from objects, doing with the body alone the acts of the body, he does not subject himself to rebirth. He is contented with whatever he receives fortuitously, if free from the influence of the pairs of opposites and from envy, the same in success and failure. Even though he act, he is not bound by the bonds of action. All the actions of such a man who is free from self-interest, who is devoted and with heart set upon spiritual knowledge, and whose acts are sacrifices for the sake of the Supreme, are dissolved and left without effect on him. It's all right, Martin.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Look at the screen.
Martin, we click.
Okay. All right, okay. That's fine. So now we have feeling with the mind. And we'd like to start with a quote from the Secret Doctrine on page 38 of the first volume. Mind is a name given to the sum of the states of consciousness grouped under thought, will, and feeling. So it's far more than what we think about as the brain, which the first speaker did mention some things about the brain. But we're speaking about mind. Brain is the organ of mind, but it's a vehicle. This is the best way to describe it. Whereas the mind is the sum of thought, will, and feeling. So that's a puzzling thought. How does one think about feeling? How do we think about feeling? Feeling with the mind is the harnessing of kama manas, kama meaning desires, to do the inspired work of buddhi manas. And buddhi is spiritual soul, or that higher intuition that knows, that looks directly upon ideas and knows. It is beyond the intellect. It is the use of the lower in service of the higher. In other words, practical altruism. In the voice of the silence, it is stated that compassion is no attribute, it is the law of laws. We can also say that we use phenomenon in the service of nomenon. So another quote is, in the philosophy of theosophy, the doctrine of consubstantiality has been repeatedly stressed. It does not require too much exertion of intelligence to comprehend that just as the physical body of man can contact the objective world around him, so too it is his subjective I am I consciousness, that is, his manas or thinking principle alone, that can cognize universal tenets or true archetypical ideas in nature. And a quote from the voice of the silence, the mind needs breadth and depth and points to draw it towards the diamond soul. So now breath refers to the broadening of our sympathies. It is only he who has the love of humanity in his heart who can become the true theosophist. In other words, there can be no local theosophist. It's a cosmopolitan outlook, looking at all of life, all departments of life, and all the kingdoms in the world as well, above and below. Theosophy is in the world to change and elevate the buddhi manas of the race. As student servers of humanity, we are tasked with thinking thoughts and performing dharma duties through aspirations of the heart. We must learn to feel love and compassion by harvesting pure feelings in the mind. We hear the phrase that in order to be practical altruists, we must live in life necessary. But what does that mean? It's a very vague phrase. Live the life necessary. Ethics divorced from world sympathy will not do. Breadth of mind is the result of unity, work, and study, being truly cosmopolitan. A widening knowledge of the thought of the world to open the heart and mind to the great heart and mind of all. That is bliss. The secret doctrine teaches that there is no plane in the whole universe with a wider margin or a wider field of action and its almost endless gradations of perceptive and apperceptive qualities than this plane of mentality. So the mystery of Manus is profound. We are mind beings. Man is derived from Manus, the thinking principle of mankind as a whole. It is sexless. But can we feel with the mind? The mind principle of Manus is dual. It is passionate and spiritual. We now have a clue to the feeling power of the mind. In mind, our higher and lower meet and mingle. So we have lower passions and desires and higher passions and desires doing battle on the plane of mind. So the fight is in the mind. We're going to be doing our yearly study and meditation on the Bhagavad Gita. And that is really the whole gist of the Bhagavad Gita, is that battle between the higher and the lower on the battlefield of the mind. If we shift the mind to the principle of kama desires, we are surrendering to a lower, overdeveloped plane of everyday life, of gratifying the lower five senses. We are always to beware of distractions. If we surrender to the lower, we lose ground in the glorious path we are endeavoring to tread. We need to elevate our mind to the higher principle of Buddhi. Buddhi joined with mind yields compassion. Buddhi is spiritual soul. It is higher intuition. It knows how to best accomplish works of charity, how to best help and teach others. So the path of Raja Yoga or occultism is focused in the mind. The field of holy war is centered in the mind. So normally we think of kama as passions and desires, and that overdeveloped principle that we have actually degraded by elevating matter above spirit. But we are told in the teachings that desire first arose in it, which is that primal germ of mind, which sages searching with their intellect have discovered in their heart. It is the bond that connects the whole of nature. When we say desire first arose in it, we're talking about the deific principle. So pure desire of the primal mind, the first impulse that set the stage for our present evolutionary cycle, is, we could say it is a loving, caring force. Now we don't want to anthropomorphize because it is not a deity, is not being, it is beingness. And periodically we emanate for the evolution of soul. So that is really, the mind is a principle. It is thought, will, and feeling. And it is, we feel with the mind, we think with the mind, we will with the mind, through self-induced and self-devised means, through overcoming the lower desires, getting back to that original kama, that higher kama, that desire for the welfare of all life and for the evolution of all beings of whatever grade. So man stands at the crossroads of spirit and matter. We are self-conscious beings. The lower lives live on impulse and instinct. And the beings above us have already been through our grade, through our state, as it were, through manhood. And these beings that are behind the theosophical movement, these possessors of the knowledge, which will never go away, which is permanent, they have been through all the states and have perfected themselves. And they are there behind the scenes, always watching over. But they can't do the work for us. We need to make our own mistakes and we need to learn our own lessons. So we do that through the thought, will, and feeling of the mind, realizing that compassion is no attribute, it is the law of laws, that it's not about us, that the lower kingdoms are, that we use every day, we are to elevate our thoughts, our will, and our feelings to help raise them up to our estate and to perfect ourselves so that someday we can help and teach others. We help and teach others now as best we can. But we don't have all knowledge. We're still very much in the state of learning, in the probationary state, as it were. We have many wonderful quotes, and we'll just read a couple here. The first is from Milton. The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell, a hell of heaven. The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled. That is from Plutarch. Another quote from The Secret Doctrine, which actually we already read, so we won't read that again. And we have some wonderful quotes from Tagore. We'll just close with this one and perhaps we'll read some others later. I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted and behold, service was joy. We invite your questions and comments at this time and we'll try to get both fit into the screen here.
SL?
We often hear in relation to the third fundamental proposition that our evolution as human beings is through self-induced and self-devised effort. Could we consider then that we self-devise with the mind and we self-induce with the heart?
Yeah, yes, we self-devise with the mind and self-induce. Yes, because we would think that the one self-devise would be centered in the mind, and then the action through the heart would come the induced part, but always the goal is to have both tempered. that whatever the desire would be, along with will, we need to look at the idea of the mind being tempered by the heart and the heart being tempered by mind.
We agree. The mind can look directly upon ideas, but the intellect is only a small portion of the thought, will, and feeling. The will can come from the heart when one sees compassionately, one realizes what there is to do. Feeling is generally a heart quality, and the heart is an intelligent organ. The mind is more like a planner. It plans, it sees, it plans, it devises, and it follows the dictates of the heart, the dictates of the soul. When one sees a need, one acts. And in the philosophy, we learn how to act intelligently, not just out of pity, but to really help, not to do something that someone else is well capable of doing. We can help induce them to do that, but if we do their duty, there's danger. There's danger for all. There's danger for everyone involved. Yes.
So, is it right to say that as we came together this morning, we have to expand our understanding of heart and head or mind or brain, that we're not thinking about the organs, rather buddhi, the heart, and manas, mind, are spiritual forces, and that's what we're talking about. Yes? No?
Yes. All to encourage a full human being who makes correct choices. It is important that all three, buddhi, mind, and heart, work together. Because it was said in the talk that if the feeling nature is not, it is not active, then someone can be very detached and disinterested. So the heart needs to be tempered with wisdom as well. And that wisdom will come from buddhi, the higher wisdom. And then mind, of course, has to be involved with this, and it needs to be tempered by the heart. So all three of them, if one is not acting, there can be a, we guess, like misinformation being sent.
So the organs are transitory, but we have built them through eons of time. Even before this evolutionary period, when we were on other planes and other planets. But all the sacred doctrine deals with the 18 million years of evolution as mind beings, the lighting up of manas, which occurred a bit over 18 million years ago. So that's the material we have to work with. It's vast, and it's deep, and it's mysterious. These organs we have built, and they are the best necessary for us, for mind beings, for spirit beings that are going through this long pilgrimage, the eternal pilgrimage. But we have to deal with the here and now of the legacy of our past mistakes, indiscretions, and also what we've done right. The legacy of the thought, will, and feelings that we have gathered together through years of service. And those that are attracted to the philosophy, it's not the first time. We are brought back to it again and again. So we've been on this journey for some time. So these organs are temporary, but the eternal pilgrim, that higher triad of soul, Atma, the vehicle of spiritual soul, Buddhi, the highest that we can attain to, that higher intuition, and Manas, the mind principle, using the organs that we have built. That's a little bit in a nutshell. MDW, did you have your hand up? You have to unmute.
The fact that we are told in Theosophy is that we are spiritual beings, and that we have descended into matter, and that we have fully clothed ourselves in matter, and now we're reascending back into spirit. So we are beings of light. And this light is what we call love. You know, what is our problem? We fall in love all the time. We're always falling in love because that's our nature, is to love. We are beings of light. So, if we realize what we are, this takes on a whole different meaning, because it's just really trying to let your nature express itself.
Well, we are trying to express ourselves. Well, we do express ourselves. We all do. No matter what we do, even if we're doing nothing, people are picking up things just by being around us, action or inaction. We never stand one moment. We're always creating karma in one direction or another.
It's true. We talk about love being of the highest, but there is a lower aspect, as was mentioned in the talk, about if the heart isn't tempered by intellect, there is a form of love that is, when we mentioned codependency, that's a form of love, but it's giving yourself over to another. And it's not a healthy or helpful type of love. But then there, we know of the love that couples have for each other, parents have for their children, and the children for the parents. There is a love for others. So love is the main idea that we need to foster. But again, there has to be wisdom behind it.
Asal? Was referred to this morning about the relativity of truth. If truth is relative, then perhaps the true service of humanity is also relative. So would it be the ideas we hold, or to state it another way, isn't the mind necessary to exercise in order to get a better understanding of what true service of humanity involves, or what could be a truer service than the what we currently consider to be the service of humanity? Do we have to use the mind to figure that out?
We always took that phrase, the true service of humanity, as being compassion. That it's the highest form of giving. That one can, the highest form of giving that one can give to another, with, as the Gita says, doing your duty and not expecting anything in return. We think that phrase right there is what is meant by the true service of humanity. That we're giving, we're doing our duty, and you know, if we give something to somebody, we're not expecting them to say, oh, thank you, that's wonderful. They should be, if they don't like it, they should be able to give it away, and the person who gave it to them shouldn't be upset about it, because the motive that people have is what will transpire when we're talking about that true service of humanity, is a high motive, part of one's duty. And you know, the true service of humanity, as we said, we think is compassion.
In the Voice of the Silence, it is written, "For mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. Seek, O beginner, to blend thy mind and soul." So that's the process, the blending of mind and soul, which is the heart and the mind together to form, you know, and the dust is of course, it's our, in a sense, we could say mistakes or our failings. And as we learn through pain and suffering and joy, the dust is blown away bit by bit, and the mirror becomes clearer and clearer. And that is the heart doctrine, which is the embodiment of Bodhi, the true, permanent, and everlasting. We do want to read this quote that is the opposite of that, and this is from Tagore as well. "A mind all logic is like a knife all blade. It makes the hand bleed that uses it."
So we're talking then about logic being straight mind without being tempered by heart.
The unfeeling mind. Yes, SL?
Why is it written in the Voice of the Silence that ignorance is better than knowledge without soul wisdom to guide it? Or intellect without soul wisdom to guide it?
Well, there are many ignorant people who are they do a lot of good. And the things they do ignorantly, they're not doing to hurt others. They just don't know any better. So ignorance is someone who doesn't know any better, who hasn't learned that lesson, Whereas a sharp, logical mind that has none of the heart quality in it is just acting on their own self-interest, their own lower self-interest. Yeah, SL follow-up?
Yes. When we read that quote, it reminds us of what HPB said, that sometimes that illumination from Buddhi, the heart, falls directly on the principle of desire, bypassing the mind. And we have a person who is totally consumed with divine compassion. And she gives an example in her time of such a person as Father Damien. And she identified him as a true theosophist. Now, he may have been, quote, ignorant of the teachings of theosophy or the fundamental principles or the secret doctrine, but that's not what made him a true theosophist in her sight. It was the blending, we might say, or it was allowing that illumination, that spiritual illumination, to guide the actions or the impulses of the heart.
Yes, and Yanka Burma was considered an ignorant cobbler, not educated, but he was certainly illumined. And he wrote in his own terms. One of them was Turba, speaking about the chaotic astral. But he's been studied by many, you know, by many intelligent people. And he had the heart doctrine, even though he was an uneducated workman. So he had it. And that's the most important thing, is that illumination of Buddhi. LG had her hand up, yes?
Yes, I read a quote recently. It's, false knowledge is worse than ignorance. In contemplating what false knowledge is, it seems to contain a sense of separateness, whereas true knowledge is universal and leaves out no department of nature. And recently, we read about a country, we can't remember the name of it, but it was a country that based all its decisions upon what was good for the whole of the people and the environment. Every decision they made was based on, is it beneficial to all? So true knowledge wouldn't leave anything out, would it?
No, that sounds like a wonderful country.
Yeah,
I'd like to know where that is. And I'd like to know where their ambassador is. I would take a trip to Washington.
There are quite a few like indigenous groups where, and even the back to nature communes, communal living organizations, that they do all of their decision making communally. They want everyone, I mean, they will discuss and argue until everybody agrees. So it is that type of knowledge is for everyone.
And it's really interesting because the indigenous peoples of North America, what we call, you know, the American Indian, it was the women who got together and decided who the chief was going to be. And they would pick the chief, and then the office was a temporary office as long as he was doing his job right.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of background that most people, now women rightly so, are getting more and more credit. It's long overdue. Yes, LJ.
One other thing that seems to help us in understanding the heart and the mind is, it went from my head. It was a good thought too. We'll have to wait and see if it comes back. Sorry.
Sure, it'll return.
It will come. We still have a few minutes left.
We like this other quote from Tagore. It is very simple to be happy, but it is very difficult to be simple.
No, especially in this day and age, to be simple. We know that there's a movement out there that, you know, for people just to kind of divest themselves from stuff. And because then when we're not worried about losing something, if we're living a very simple life and we're not worried about something breaking down or losing, you know, an important item or whatever, then we can look at our inward life instead of the external one.
Here's a great quote, another one from Tagore, that we think has to do with relative truth and big T truth. The small wisdom is like water in a glass, clear, transparent, pure. The great wisdom is like water in the sea, dark, mysterious, impenetrable. SL?
We were thinking of that use of the word simple, and simple sometimes refers to the essential power or quality of a thing. And so it would seem then we can live a simple life in the most complex of civilizations if the basis of our actions and thoughts are grounded in a few, quote, simple, basic, universal ideas. So the simplification is on the spiritual level. It does not have to be on the plane of the outer expression.
Mm-hmm. Come ye out and be separate.
LG, did it come back?
Yes.
All right.
thinking with the heart seems to be looking at the plane of causes rather than effects. Can we see that?
Thinking with
the heart is dealing with causes, not effects.
Or effects.
I don't know. We wonder if thinking with the mind is looking at causes and not effects.
Okay.
That's what we were thinking.
Well, say for instance, we see someone being belligerent on a bus. They're being miserable to everybody. If we can look at them and maybe say, are you okay? What's causing you to behave this way? Is something wrong? Rather than looking at the effects of how they're upsetting other people.
Well,
and we find out that their life is going wrong. And so we open up a dialogue on that basis.
That would be wonderful if we would have the courage to do that. And it's something to the right tone, the right stance, the right circumstance. Perhaps an opportunity would open. It could backfire, but we shouldn't worry about what happens to ourselves. Mm-hmm. If it backfires, it backfires. It could explode. We don't know, but it's certainly worth trying. One quick one, and then we have to close. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, LJ.
While we think that Buddha, the stories of Buddha, give good examples of knowing that, of acting from the heart and knowing the right thing to say at the right time.
Right. So if we're acting out of genuine concern, hopefully that person will see that rather than just trying to stop a very uncomfortable or potentially dangerous situation. So perhaps we'll be on that bus someday. Give it a try. So we thank you all for attending and sharing. and thinking and considering these ideas. Remember, thoughts are things and powerful things. So let us all strive to elevate our thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.